That's a good place to start. What
Being
did
in a
you just
fog,
say?
my mind is in a fog.
So what on earth does that mean?
What do you mean your mind's in a fog?
I can feel like this. It could just, it feels like maybe, you know, toxins circulating in my head. And it's whenever we take these long trails and we walk, for some reason, it just activates whatever toxins are in my body. And my brain gets really fuzzy.
Your brain gets really fuzzy.
Mm-hmm. It's like, it's a feeling. It's like I can feel there's something.
Feeling that your
going
brain
on.
Is fuzzy.
Yep.
I'm fascinated by this.
Yeah.
I never feel my brain is fuzzy. How come? I do have toxins as well. I'm in the same toxic environment as everyone else.
Right.
I wonder why I don't feel that. I would like to know what it is that you were, what your experience is. It could be very relevant. It certainly is very relevant regarding the use of the Dragonfly Sutra.
Okay.
Because given that everyone who comes to the practice agrees
mm-hmm.
that the recitation of the Dragonfly Sutra will clean and hone the mind, certainly I'm sure that a lot of people would, a lot of those who would like to participate might come with the same complaint that you have. You know, it's kind of a complaint, I'll
yeah.
call it that.
Mm-hmm.
It's not a derogatory term.
Mm-hmm.
That a lot of people suffer from this condition of mental congestion, mental fog, having ideas they don't want. And so it would be typical to bring that to the moment for the recitation of the Dragonfly Sutra.
Totally.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
So what I would like to understand is... What can you say more about this condition that you're describing? Do you frequently have this condition?
Yes, for the most part. Usually if I go on a 7-day cleanse where all I'm doing is just juicing and not eating, because it's all about the toxins in the liver and the gallbladder, so you're actually cleaning all that out, it's amazing how it clears your mind. So I haven't done a 7-day cleanse in a while. So I think that...
So you're aware
yes.
of when you have this mental fog.
Oh, yeah.
And you're also aware, you can confirm from experience, that certain changes of diet and certain routines, such as fasting or purging,
mm-hmm.
Will affect this mental fog.
Completely.
And cause it to dissipate.
Yes.
I see.
Mm-hmm. And I know that's why I know the difference, because when I'm clear, it's such a wonderful place to be in my head. But it just obstructs anything that's coming in when, because it does feel like there's like cotton in my nose. It's probably a form of congestion. And it's right here. This is where I feel it. So it's got to be kind of related to the sinuses.
Gesturing around your nose and your eyes and the bridge of your nose and
yep.
and your forehead.
Mm-hmm. Right in here.
Right.
Yep.
Well, that's pretty interesting. There might be something to be learned from this. So let's talk about it a little bit
okay.
before we get going.
Mm-hmm.
I think it would be fair to say that human animals in our time do suffer various forms of mental congestion and mental confusion. And so, raises the question, will practice with the Dragonfly Sutra cure these problems, you know?
Mm-hmm.
Well, my first impulse is to certainly say yes. No doubt. However, I have a reservation about saying that due to the question of, well, what is the mind-body relationship? So if the body is carrying toxins, and of course everyone is, so the toxins that come in the water, in the air, you know, and so forth. What are we saying? We're saying that somehow the body is throwing up a field due to its condition. The body is throwing up a field into the mind, and you and others and myself will experience that as congestion, confusing thoughts, conflicting thoughts, things of that type. Is this making sense?
Total sense.
So again, the question is, what is the value of the practice with the Dragonfly Sutra relative to that condition? I think it's safe to say that a lot of people suffer from this condition. Okay? Well, I'm tempted to say this, just as an introduction. You don't have to know exactly how the body-mind dynamic works.
Okay.
Let's just say there is a body-mind dynamic. So what you are actually experiencing in your animal body, in your cells, in your brain, in your nerves, in your lymphatic system, has a relation to what's happening in your mind. And in turn, what happens in your mind has a relation to what happens in your body. Now, one of the positive ways of transacting that relation is proven in systems of biofeedback. So it's proven, for instance, that someone who has a bodily condition like high blood pressure, by using biofeedback, can lower their own blood pressure, which is an example of how the mind can work on the body.
Mm-hmm.
So there is a mind-body dynamic. The mind and body can work on each other either positively or negatively. It's not necessary to actually know much about that to use the sutra.
Okay.
So we don't really have to go there. Just go directly to the sutra. And then, with the practice of the sutra, the mind-body dynamic becomes more and more lucid. So we don't approach it theoretically. We don't approach it with trying to analyze what the mind-body dynamic is. We just know there is one. And then we'll see, well, maybe by going to the sutra, it will get sorted out.
And that is probably what is going to happen.
In the practice of the sutra.
In the practice.
I would say you can anticipate that happening.
I can.
Everyone can.
Yes.
Everyone can.
Yes.
But given that, I want to add one last caveat, which is that mind and intelligence are not the same. Intelligence is what you carry in your entire body. Your body is intelligent. Your mind is your mind. Not the same.
Mm-hmm.
So the problem that we're talking about here is the problem of living in Kali Yuga, in a toxic environment, in an environment of brainwashing and mind control, in a nasty environment. Social environment that's programmed and controlled by really, really nasty people. The problem with all that is that it all goes on the body. So your innate intelligence, the innate intelligence that you have as a human animal, which resides in your body, gets screwed up. And then your body can't use the tool of the mind properly. See?
That makes
sense.
This is
the problem that we're all in.
Yes.
So how do we solve that problem? How do we approach that problem? Well, let's just go to the mind and look at the tool of the mind and see how it works.
Mm-hmm.
And work it intelligently, work it skillfully, and then see if that improves the mind-body dynamic. That's the way that I'm framing it for mm-hmm. right now.
Makes sense.
Yeah, it's okay as an initial approach.
Mm-hmm.
Recitation is a universal factor in all religions and religion and so-called spiritual practices, right?
Mm-hmm.
So the Catholics recite prayers, they recite Hail Marys, you know, everybody recites. Mm-hmm. The Native American Indians recite when they sing their prayers and pound the drum. The Buddhists recite, they mm-hmm. chant mantras and so forth. But recitation with the Dragonfly Sutra is entirely different. It's the Dragonfly Sutra is actually a tool of instruction. It actually teaches you how to observe and master the way your mind works. And the purpose of reciting it is so that you can receive that teaching.
Mm-hmm.
It's a prompting device. And the way that the prompt works is extremely ingenious. All you have to do is recite the lines according to the method that we're going to demonstrate now.
Mm-hmm.
And as you recite the lines, you don't even have to think about your mind. You don't even have to remind yourself that this tool can teach you about your mind. All you have to do is remember that it describes the way a dragonfly flies. And so the reference of the mind, the immediate reference of the mind from the lines of the sutra is to the visualization of a dragonfly in flight.
Mm-hmm.
That is the continual and immediate reference to the mind. And from that reference, a series of insights and questions will spontaneously appear. They will spontaneously resolve. And then by discussing those questions and looking at them, you are allowing the tool to instruct you about your own mind.
Mm-hmm.
That would be my summary of how it works, okay?
Okay.
So it begins the same way with everyone. It begins mm-hmm. with Tathagata,
mm-hmm.
which is the zero reset of the mind. So by merely saying Tathagata at the beginning of the recitation, you reset your mind to the zero position. You clear the mind for something new and fresh to come in
mm-hmm.
simply by saying that word. Then again, off and on in the recitation, you count to one. How do you know when to count to one? Well, we'll see that as you do the recitation, your mind spontaneously goes to a thought. You start to think about something. And something other than the flight of a dragonfly, okay?
Mm-hmm.
The moment you start to think about something, that's when you count to one. The count to one is always the same. What directs your attention to the productions of your mind is not a product of your mind. That's the count to one. So it's natural, it occurs with everyone, that in the course of playing with the Dragonfly Sutra and reciting it and having the pleasure of repeating the lines, suddenly your mind will start to work, like it always works. But the moment that you see that your mind starts to work, you count to one. And then you wait.
Mm-hmm.
And that's when the teaching begins. The instruction comes in after you count to one. So you start from zero
mm-hmm.
in the beginning of the recitation, but you don't necessarily go back to zero again. If you need to go back to the zero reset, because things get confused and too many thoughts are coming in or your thoughts are getting to be foggy and confusing,
mm-hmm.
then you say Tathagata and you go back to the zero reset.
Mm-hmm.
So you're actually operating from the zero reset, between that and the count to one.
But when I say Tathagata, the beat of wings, I visualize the dragonfly.
Yeah, you visualize the dragonfly.
Right.
You always use the mantra of the Dragonfly Sutra. You accompany it with a picture of the dragonfly.
Mm-hmm.
Okay? It's as if you're observing the dragonfly.
But my mind goes blank. It's not like thoughts are coming in. I picture the dragonfly.
You occupy your mental field with the visualization of the dragonfly.
Exactly.
That's the only way that you're, in a sense, controlling your mind.
Mm-hmm.
You concentrate on the visualization of the flight of a dragonfly.
That's right.
While you recite the lines. Now remember, I will recite a line, the first line, and you will say it exactly as I do, beginning with Tathagata.
Mm-hmm.
Then when I say the second line, you repeat the first line without Tathagata. How do you say the first line without Tathagata?
The beat of wings.
Right. And then you add the second line.
Right.
Then I will recite the third line by itself, and you will go 1, 2, 3.
Right. And hope that I remember it.
Well, we'll see. We'll see. We'll see. Is it hard to remember?
I don't know. Well, the poem was.
The poem was just an example. I didn't expect anyone to memorize the poem.
No, but it was
a difficult poem.
Right. Yeah. And because it was the initial lesson mm-hmm. on how to remember the dragon. So I was fine with the first line, fine with the second line, fine with the third line. Then came the fourth line. I was like completely lost. I couldn't remember only the first line. The beat of wings and everything else just went kaputs.
Well, I was messing around a bit by providing a poem by Emily Dickinson, because the poems of Emily Dickinson are extraordinary constructions, not the easiest poem
to remember.
I could have used, you know, Mary Had a Little Lamb.
There you go. Then we would have remembered.
So this is how it goes. And the recitation is always the same, and it's the same for everyone. Do not modify it, do not mess with it, do not jerk it around, because in following the simple procedure of the recitation, you enable the sutra to perform for you its optimal benefit. Tathagata, the beat of wings.
Tathagata. The beat of wings.
Moving on air.
Tathagata, the beat of wings.
Okay, stop there. It's a common mistake. Once you have the first line and you are provided with the second line,
moving on air,
you do not repeat Tathagata when you repeat the first line.
Okay.
The only time you remember, Tathagata is the zero preset of the mind.
Right.
It clears the mind so that you have, it refreshes the mind. It's like the refresh button on the computer. If you're watching a YouTube clip or if you're watching any program, you refresh the program.
Mm-hmm.
It actually refreshes the mind.
Okay.
So you only go back to Tathagata if in the process of talking about the recitation, as you'll see, we discuss it as we proceed.
Mm-hmm.
If you, who is receiving the recitation from the primary person,
mm-hmm.
becomes confused or foggy, you say, let's go back to reset. And then we go back to reset.
Okay, that makes sense.
So, we try again.
All right.
Tathagata, the beat of wings.
Tathagata, the beat of wings.
Moving on air.
The beat of wings, moving on air.
Stirred by wings.
The beat of wings, moving on air, stirred by wings.
That flutter then and there.
The beat of wings. There
Oops,
she goes.
There you go. Okay, back to the start. No, we're not going to discuss anything now.
Okay.
To memorize four short lines cannot be the most monumental task before the human species.
Of course not.
Tathagate, the beat of wings.
Tathagate, the beat of wings.
Moving on air.
The beat of wings moving on air.
Stirred by wings.
The beat of wings moving on air. Stirred by wings.
Stirred by wings. The beat of wings moving on air. Stirred by wings. Now let's stop.
Okay.
You're visualizing the flight of a dragonfly.
Mm-hmm.
Now when you hear these three lines, well, the beat of wings moving on air. Well, that's obvious because they're beating and they fly by moving on air.
Mm-hmm.
Stirred by wings. Well, what does that say? The air that the dragonfly flies in has already been stirred by wings.
Mm-hmm.
So you have wings moving on air stirred by wings. So now look at the picture of the dragonfly and try to picture that.
Mm-hmm.
What question does it raise as you hold that visualization? First you see the dragonfly, and how many wings does it have?
Mm-hmm.
How
it
many?
Has four.
And are they, how are they arranged?
There are two in the front, two in the back.
Right, so there's a front set and a back set.
Right.
So the beat of wings, well, which wings? Is it the front set or the back set? Leave that open. Moving on air, stirred by wings. So what does that suggest to you as you're picturing the dragonfly? You're looking at it and you're trying to see, well, which set of wings is stirring the air that the other set of wings moves on. And when anyone looks at the photography of dragonflies, which is quite exquisite,
It is.
Isn't that something that naturally, your natural curiosity draws you to that? Looking at the wings of the dragonfly flutter, the front set and the back set, well, how do they interact?
Mm-hmm.
Does the front set move on the air stirred by the back set?
Or the back set
move on the air stirred by the front set? And the answer to that is, you don't know.
Mm-hmm.
And this is good. Because neither do you know how your mind works. But the fact that you can visualize it and open your mind to the question is the first step in learning from the sutra. The first thing you learn is that you don't know. It teaches you what you don't know.
Mm-hmm. That's right.
And then from teaching you what you don't know, you move on to see something that you didn't see before. Tathagate, the beat of wings.
Tathagate, the beat of wings.
Moving on air.
The beat of wings. Moving on air.
Stirred by wings.
The beat of wings. Moving on air. Stirred by wings.
That flutter then and there.
The beat of wings. That.
By seeing how you stumble, even from the first to the second line, This is the instruction of the sutra. It tells you that you stumble from one thought to the next in the same way.
There you go. Yes.
You can't even get from one thought to the next without stumbling. That's the measure of how unskillfully you use your mind.
Thank you.
You're very welcome. But the very fact that you can see that and you can admit it is so is the beginning of learning how to use your mind.
I love it because I want to use my mind.
Everyone does. Everyone who has any humanity left in them wants to be enlightened on the use of their own mind. And so...
And it's never too late.
It's never too late. In fact, it's just exactly the right moment.
It's only the beginning.
So can you allow that even by fumbling in the memorization of these lines, you're beginning to learn something about how you use your mind?
Yes.
Just as you can visualize the flight of the butterfly, of the dragonfly, excuse me, but you cannot quite picture which wings are stirring the air on which the other wings are moving, so you cannot grasp the elementary functions of your own mind. There are always two events happening in your mind. How do you know that? Well, you know that when you count to one. No, you even know it from the zero precept. Remember that when you say Tathagata, you click the refresh button.
Mm-hmm.
And the word Tathagata itself...
Actually
what?
I really like Tathagata more than Tathagata.
Yes.
There's something about that.
It's fresher. It has a leap to it.
Yes.
Tathagata
just stops.
Tathagata is just kind of dull. But Tathagata,
it just flows.
Goes somewhere.
Mm-hmm.
So every time you say Tathagata, it's equivalent to pressing the reset button.
Mm-hmm.
And at the same time, you don't always have to do this, but frequently you remind yourself of that snippet. What moves on and what causes to move on.
Right. I love that.
Those are two different things.
The two different wings.
Right. And I was thinking the other day of what are some good analogies to explain the beautiful instruction that is even contained in that phrase.
Mm-hmm.
What moves on and what causes to move on. And I thought of the example of being on a bicycle. So suppose you're sitting on a bicycle, and you know when you sit on a bicycle, you can put your feet on the pedals, obviously, and run the bicycle.
Mm-hmm.
But you can also sit on the bicycle seat and have your legs on the ground. So suppose that you're sitting on a bicycle with your 2 feet on the ground, not on the pedals on either side.
Mm-hmm.
You're stable, unmoving.
Mm-hmm.
And suppose, however, that you are doing that on an incline at the top of a hill.
Okay.
And that the road goes down and that the bicycle itself is already heading down. The front wheel is lower than the back wheel. So, you're in that position, you're on the bicycle, and you don't even have to pedal now. All you have to do is lift your feet off the ground. What happens? The bicycle
movement just takes it down.
Starts to go down the hill.
Mm-hmm.
What moves on? What moves on is the bicycle.
Right.
What causes to move on is the slope of the hill and something that some people would call gravity.
There you go. But there is no gravity.
There is no gravity, right? There is a difference, then, you can say, between what moves on, which is you on the bicycle, without pedaling, by the way.
Mm-hmm.
You're not operating your mind intentionally. What causes it to move on? So at any moment, what's happening in your mind is that something is moving on, which is called the production of your mind. A thought drifting by, you're thinking about your dog, thinking about your grandmother, a memory, a perception, you're reading something you read in a book, you're thinking of something you saw on the internet. That's
what
moves on through your mind.
I see. That's what moves on. But what causes to move on?
What causes that to move on?
Right.
What causes any thought to arise or any thought to disappear? So when you go back to the zero precept,
mm-hmm.
It not only refreshes your mind, but if you choose to recall this phrase, it prepares you for the acute perception, the lucidity of seeing the difference between what goes on in your mind and what causes it to go on.
Could causing to move on be the intelligence?
We don't know. We don't know what that is.
Okay.
It could be the intelligence, mm-hmm. because intelligence has the, it's a very good guess, by the way, mm-hmm. because intelligence has the property of teleology, which is goal orientation. Intelligence, wherever you look, is busy about doing something. Whereas it doesn't always appear that your mind in its natural state is doing anything but sort of running itself.
Mm-hmm.
But why is it running itself? Why are these thoughts arising and dissolving? What moves on are the productions of your mind. What causes to move on is ... question mark.
Mm-hmm.
The sutra will show you and teach you what causes to move on.
Okay.
And it will teach you to sharpen your perception of the working of your mind so that you can see the difference.
Perfect.
Tathagate, the beat of wings.
Tathagate, the beat of wings.
Moving on air.
The beat of wings, moving on air.
Stirred by wings.
The beat of wings, moving on air. Stirred by wings.
That flutter then and there.
The beat of wings that...
Okay, so we just had a conversation that didn't get recorded, but the takeaway of it is that the failure, which everyone exhibits who comes to this, mm-hmm. so far, in my experience, to even be able to string two or three lines together, is an event that shows you that you cannot master the most fundamental processes of your own mind. You cannot go into your own mind and use it for three beats. You cannot even do three beats of your own mind.
Mm-hmm.
And what are beats? They are the movements from one production of the mind to the next. So that is not entirely true, however, because if you apply your mind to something, like you paint, for instance, mm-hmm. or I write, or someone else may do whatever they're doing, in the exercise of when your intelligence applies your mind to do something, then you can do several beats. But the problem is you cannot apply your mind to the acute and lucid observation of how it works. That's enlightenment.
Mm-hmm.
You don't have 2 to 3 beats of enlightenment working for you.
There you go.
But if you do something like cooking a meal, at which you are excellent, or developing a painting of an animal, you have many, many beats, because your intelligence knows how to use your mind to do that.
Mm-hmm.
But your intelligence does not know how to use your mind to see how your mind works. When you can do that, that's this enlightenment.
Mm-hmm.
This enlightenment is unique. It's simple, it's fundamental, and you get to it through the practice of the sutra.
Mm-hmm. And it makes a lot of sense, because repetition is how I learn things. And unfortunately, I'll repeat it to myself until I understand it and I can integrate it. But then a month later, I can't remember it again.
What are you talking about? You've never even repeated it.
I'm not talking about the Dragonfly Sutra. I'm just talking about something that I'm interested in, that I really want to maintain in my mind. And I'll listen to it many times and I'll remember it really well. And then one day, it took off.
Well, it's very instructive and relevant that you're bringing up this point.
Okay.
We began by talking about the difficulty of mental confusion, mental fog, which is common in our time. And by the way, no one, I advise no one to fault themselves on this matter. Don't consider that you're dumb. Don't consider that you're foggy-minded. It's the condition of pollution that we live in. It's not your fault. Everyone suffers from it. And the other, one of the other, perhaps the other outstanding, detriment to our development as human animals is the damage to memory. Now you see, memory is carried in the body. Memory is, in fact, not exactly a property of the mind. There is a property of intelligence, which is called retention. So animals have retention, dogs have retention, and this faculty, of not of your intelligence, but of your mind, of all of us, has been severely damaged. So the beauty, one of the beauties of the Dragonfly Sutra is that it can restore your retention. It can restore and heal and regenerate your power of memory. And all you have to do is remember 11 lines of 55 words. If you can remember 11 lines of 55 words of the Dragonfly Sutra, the effect of doing that and reciting it will regenerate and restore your powers of memory. And all of us have had our powers of memory very severely damaged. And one of the tools that most impacts on our powers of memory is that right there that I'm pointing to.
Exactly. I agree.
That computer. Totally. That device. Because it is the archontic imp, the archontic smurf, the sorcerer's apprentice that comes up to you and says, oh, hey, you don't have to remember anything. I'll remember it for you.
That's it.
And the damage that has been done to human memory in recent times by this equipment that we're using right now. You see, in the past, if there was no computer, there would be you and I in this room doing this recitation and maybe 10 other people listening, and they would remember it for us. But nobody remembers anything now because they all rely on the computer to remember it. We're relying on the computer to remember it by recording it.
Right.
So we have to be able to turn that around so that it's no longer damages us and restore the power of memory and retention. And this is one of the things that the sutra will do. So we'll go one more run.
Okay. All right. I'll be serious now.
You haven't been being serious up until now?
Well, the laughing.
The laughing
is not
good.
Serious.
The laughing is good.
Right.
It's not a serious crying if you can't remember the first three lines. Yeah, laugh at yourself. It's healthy.
Okay. Good.
Tathagate, the beat of wings.
Tathagate, the beat of wings.
Moving on air.
The beat of wings, moving on air.
Stirred by wings.
The beat of wings, moving on air. Stirred by wings
that flutter then and there.
The beat of wings moving on air.
Okay, here we are again. Does it seem that we've been here before?
Yes.
Why are we back to this place? We're back here because the sutra is showing you that you can't even do three beats of your own mind. What is the beat of wings in your mind? It is the beat from one thought to another. You go from one thought to another. Each thought is like a beat. And you can't even do three beats. So it's showing you that at this moment, your skill and your lucidity of how your own mind operates is that bad.
It's bad.
But it's not showing you that to make you feel bad. In fact, it's laughable that it's so bad.
It's helping me to understand my mind.
It's helping you to see that you have a beautiful tool, that your intelligence has a beautiful tool available, and you don't even know how to use it for three beats.
There you go.
And each time we return to that realization, your mind gets sharper and sharper and sharper, and eventually it gets so sharp that you go to the next beat.
That's right.
The beat of wings is it's brilliant. This poem, recitation, mantra, whatever you want to call it, is an awesome product of wisdom. How can it prompt you to visualize the beat of wings of a dragonfly and at the same time teach you how your mind works?
Mm-hmm.
How can that be possible? Yet that's exactly what it does. So we're going to make yet one more run. Okay?
All right, we'll try again.
We go first to the zero precept. Tathagate, the beat of wings.
Tathagate, the beat of wings.
Moving on air.
The beat of wings, moving on air.
Stirred by wings.
The beat of wings, moving on air. Stirred by wings.
That flutter then and there.
The beat of wings, moving on air. Stirred by wings that flutter on air.
Close.
That flutter.
Refresh. You have to refresh. Why do you have to refresh? Because the only way that you can, and this is something that the Chan masters taught, the only way that you can realize the enlightenment of your mind is from the first moment you have about it. You cannot realize it from a developed thought about it, because any developed thought about your enlightenment inherent to your mind will take you away from its immediacy. So the only true thought that you can have about the enlightenment of your own mind is the first thought that you have about it. And you always return to the first thought. So that's what we call bodhicitta, or the zero precept. I call it the zero precept in this current and novel instruction.
Mm-hmm.
But traditionally, it was called bodhicitta, which means the thought of enlightenment.
Okay.
That is what comes to you when you say tathagate. Tathagate, the beat of wings.
Tathagate, the beat of wings.
Moving on air.
The beat of wings. Moving on air.
Stirred by wings.
The beat of wings. Moving on air. Stirred by wings.
That flutter then and there.
The beat of wings. Moving on air. That.
Okay, again, that was a not recorded conversation. But pick it up from where we were talking.
The condition of watching movies, checking things out on a video, because of the way images are being projected, our minds are constantly looking at images, and these images are coming very quickly.
Very rapidly.
And so it's messing with our mind. And even though we're not recognizing it when it's happening, it doesn't allow us to pick up on the mind and
its enlightened function.
Right, because it's disturbing the way that we record information.
the way that information is fed to us,
right,
actually disrupts the continuity of the mind. One of the characteristics of the way that information is fed to us today is what was used to be called in MTV videos jackhammer editing.
That's it.
Jackhammer editing.
Mm-hmm.
So if you watch a clip of anything, news, no matter what, you only get a few seconds and then it cuts and you get another few seconds.
And that's messing with our minds.
That's messing with your mind in a really profound way,
mm-hmm.
and in a nefarious and evil way, I must add. And so one of the things that you will notice is with practice with the sutra,
mm-hmm.
as you become more skillful and attentive to the enlightenment in your mind, to its enlightened function,
mm-hmm.
you see, the only way that you can know how your mind, the tool of your mind, actually works is to know its enlightened working. You can only know it's enlightened working. You cannot know in any other way. What you think you know about how your mind works now is what the Buddhists call avidya, or ignorance. You actually are ignorant, and that's shown by the fact that you can't go three beats with your mind.
I'm guilty.
So, and are we all? This will occur with everyone. This will occur with everyone who practices this honestly,
mm-hmm.
you see?
Sure.
So I had mentioned, in the conversational part that we did not get recorded, about bodhicitta. So Buddhist teachings, some of which are valuable to retain a little bit of the content, could be valuable in reference to what we're doing now, commonly use the term bodhicitta, which is translated as the thought of enlightenment. So the only way that you can realize your enlightenment in its immediacy is in the first thought that you have about it. Not in the second or third or fourth thought. It's always in the first thought that you had about it.
Mm-hmm.
And this is called the bodhicitta, or the thought of enlightenment. But in the Dragonfly Sutra, it's the zero precept. So every time you go back to the zero precept, you go back to what the Buddhists would call the thought of enlightenment.
Mm-hmm.
So we're going to go back to the zero precept one more time.
Okay.
And we're going to make one more run. Tathagate, the beat of wings.
Tathagate, the beat of wings.
Moving on air.
The beat of wings, moving on air.
Stirred by wings.
The beat of wings, moving on air, stirred by wings.
That flutter then and there.
The beat of wings